The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. General Manager Brian Danahy at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, when he makes a promise, he keeps it. In fact, that's the way it is at Ed Morse. Over 1.2 million people have been backed by Morse with their price protection promise. And right now, during the Move Up sales event, drive a 2019 XT4 Premium Luxury just $299 a month. Plus, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa will make your first payment. Visit edmorsecadillactampa.com, edmorsecadillactampa.com, for all the details at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, right there on their website, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. All the great offers for this month are laid out for you. 2019 Cadillac CTS, $399 lease per month. 2019 Cadillac XT4, the all-new XT4, $339 lease per month, and your first payment is waived. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com is the website, and the dealership there is right on Causeway Boulevard. Hector LeBron, general manager, ask for him. He will take care of you personally. He's happy to give that personal service. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Thanks to them for sponsoring all of Ira Kaufman's work at JoeBucksFan.com. They make him possible to continue entertaining and being the sage of Tampa Bay sports. And here's Ira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Ira Kaufman Podcast, it is back. It is pre-draft week. Ira, I'm right. Steve Isbitz, Joe Bucks fan. Lee DeCamper is here. The Sage is in the house. The King of Newport, Richie, the custodian of Canton. He is wearing his Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon navy blue gear. He's Mr. Kaufman. Ira, look, we're here at $1. Jason Light has spoken. We have so much to get to. This is part one of the podcast. Part two is coming later this week. Mr. Ira, though, first, though, we'll get to Mr. Light later. How are you? Are you dressed for the new schedule? What is this?
You know, I love to drive to Kemper up a wall, and his tirade last week was priceless. Lee, I'm wearing blue in honor of Bobby Vinton. Bobby Vinton, I believe he sang Mr. Blue. He sang a bunch of blue songs. And so I got my navy blue. He was big in the early 60s. But yeah, before the British invasion hit.
I was thinking 50s, but okay.
Yeah,
but
little Bobby Vinton.
Was he the pride of Poland?
He might have been the pride of Poland.
Yeah, he's like in a Polish Hall of Fame or something.
Lee, here we are. People are mocking left
Steve's
and right.
Steve's laughing. There is such a thing.
Mock this, mock that. And we're a little more than a week out from the draft. I can't wait for Buffalo Wild Wings. Last year, Lee, while you were ensconced at $1 place surrounded by all your friends, I was one of the first on hand. I think I beat Isbitz there by an hour. I'm over there yucking it up. When he came through the door, I'm holding court with about 12 Buck fans, which quickly grew to about 600 Buck fans. I don't expect Mr. and Mrs. Grimes on hand, but we will have special guests, and I'm psyched, Lee. I'm psyched for our draft party, and you're stuck with your minions over here at $1.
At least I'll get free food. That's the one positive out of it.
Well, speaking of the draft party and speaking of the Polish Hall of Fame, of course, the ringleader of yes. the draft party is yes. the commish, Justin Pawlowski. And I'll just run down some real quick.
That's an outstanding segue over there.
That's a great one.
It's outstanding.
All right, Ira, let me hit some quick nuggets on the draft party. Buffalo Wild Wings, South Tampa. Inside, outside, $3 shots. Bud Light is one of the sponsors. There's all kinds of $3, those big, giant aluminum cans, all kinds of opportunities, the $25 buffet, and there'll be music pumping until the draft starts. But then outside, you got the full HD situation, tents, inside, special guests, which will be announced very, very soon. So everybody's fired up. It's for all free. You can show up and get a water and hang out. You don't have to.
What's the latest over-under on my shots over there, Stevie?
Well, now that they're doing the $3 shots, here's the thing. You know, lines move, Ira. So it used to be 5.5.
Lines move through injuries. I got no injuries. I'm healthy, baby.
It used to be 5.5 on the shots, but now they've gone to $3,
uh-oh.
The shots.
How's
so
that move the line?
That I think that pushes it up to 6 because, you know, that'd be more incentive for people to hand you shots
DeCamper,
when they're just $3.
You putting a wager down on this, DeCamper?
If I would, it'd be on the under.
It'd be on the under. Yeah. All right, there you go.
Yeah, I'm going with the over. Still going with the over.
My man from Philly's bringing me another 76ers hat. Because the other one is, you know, the Atlantic Ocean from last year's Daytona Beach trip. Boom. Within 30 seconds, right in the water. with the sunglasses and the 76er hat. What have we heard from Javier? Do we expect our man from Panama?
I don't know. You can ask him on Twitter. All right, Ira, look, the schedule is coming out tomorrow night.
Correct.
And that's like a holiday for most serious Bucks fans. They love it. They love it. They like to just look, and then all of a sudden everybody gets their instant, they're going to open 5-3.
And we saw how accurate it was last year because everybody said 0-3 start. And the next thing you know, they're 2-0.
I was gloom and doom.
Lee's raising his arm.
Oh, that's right. You know, it feels like 3 weeks ago. You know, that time flies. Yeah, Lee was like 0-3. Oh my gosh, and we had fun with that. But the schedule comes out, and what are you hoping for, Ira, with the schedule?
Tell you what I'm hoping for, Lee. I don't care if they're playing the Little Sisters of the Poor, and I don't care if they're playing the defending NFL champions. What I'm looking for is to get the heck out of September with a freaking winning record.
Yeah.
The last time that's happened, and I hate to mention this year because it turned into a brutal campaign, but 2011, which was
turned
out to be Raheem's final year, they got off to a very good start.
4-2, right?
They were 4-2, and then the roof caved in, and that's the one time that we used the word quit. Without any second thoughts. Quit.
If real quick, I'm going to say I need to apologize to you. I got out of hand the last one. I should never raise your voice to you. Never, ever.
I got to apologize. I think our listeners loved it, the Kemper. Never apologize.
Well, I was out of line.
We have a president. Never apologize.
Yeah, I was out of line. And as our president would say, sad. It was sad I got out of line like that. So, but to your point.
Steve, that's classic podcast.
Oh, it was passionate. I don't know. Understand the apologies. This is football.
Well, Lee's a classic.
It came across as I was being disrespectful to you. And
this is what men do at Hooters. It's what men
among
do.
Other things.
And this is what you're going to see at the draft party. You're going to see some serious discussion, Lee.
To your point, when the Bucks jumped up to the 4-2 record, if I remember correctly, they beat the Saints. It was a home game, and if I also remember correctly, Quincy Black may have had a pick that game to seal the win,
possibly
because Quincy Black's name came up right away.
But
when
nobody in the world saw a 10-game losing streak coming.
No,
after that 4-2 start, and it was on the heels of a 10-6 record.
Yeah, everybody was buoyant. There's the word for you, buoyant.
Yeah, there you go, buoyant.
Now here's one for you. I'm going to ask you, and we're talking about losing records and losing games in a row. I'm writing some snippets of Bruce Arians on All or Nothing, which was the 2015 season when he coached the Cardinals.
Boy, are you breaking that down, DeKemper?
Oh, thank you. There's plenty of firewood to use. Arians is great. Well, anyway, Arians had a comment I thought was very interesting, very telling. And obviously, this was 2015. This wasn't 2018 or 19.
That was his best year, was 15.
When they went to the conference channel and they melted down at Carolina. Arians told his team, after they got beat by the Rams at home, he told his team, teams that have character and good leaders do not lose two in a row. And I said, okay, I got to look at the Bucks last couple of years. Well, last year meaning 2017, they lost 5 in a row. And, of course, this past year, 2018, they lost 2 different times, 4 in a row. So, given what Arian said, what do you make of that?
They lack character.
They
lack character. You know, I don't know who they're going to open with. I hope they open at home so Arians can get off in front of the fans in week one.
Yeah, you know, going back to that 2011 season when they lost 10 in a row after the 4-2 start and then Raheem Morris was fired, I said to myself, and we didn't have podcasts then, but my mindset was, you know what, Josh Freeman, you don't ever find a good quarterback who loses 10 in a row.
No.
With a team.
And you're not blaming it all on Josh Freeman.
No,
see,
but they just find a way to pull the team out of it, put them on their back for one game. They just don't go on those streaks if they're the franchise quarterback kind of guy. You know, that kind of held true. But yet, here we sit with Jameis, lost 12 in a row on the road. One of my hopes, going back to 2016, I just hope that they get an early road win to get that out of Jameis's head, because any human would have to be wondering, why can't I win a game on the road anymore? And, Arians seems to think Jameis is a little fragile mentally. He doesn't want him looking over at his shoulder to back up. He wants, rah, 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 Jameis, you're the guy. So I just hope Jameis can get past that little hump on his career.
And, Lee, to be fair, you can't pin these road woes all on Winston, because they've gone 1-7 each of the last 2 years. And that's with the win in New Orleans. 1-7 each of the last 2 years. You got to go 4-4 on the road. That's what you do. You go 4-4 on the road. It helps immensely. How do you win in the Superdome and then lose your next seven road games? How does that happen?
That defense was that bad. It really was that bad. You may get mad at me, and I understand why. But two weeks ago, I started referring to it as a football atrocity. It was a football atrocity.
Especially on the road. The defense on the road was absolutely abysmal. They weren't prepared. How many times in the last few years, including 2016, which they finished with a winning record, but every year they have two or three road games when they don't show up. Steve,
yeah.
Good teams don't do that. They might do it once. They don't do it two or three times. This team's doing it way too often. They're unprepared at the start of a road game.
Well, look, that's a big theme of that you can look at when you see Jason Light at the podium. And just everything you've inhaled about the Buccaneers since January is coaching's going to fix a lot of this.
And twice it happened against an Arians team. Am I correct?
I believe
it was twice.
Oh, they got blown out both times.
Yeah, 2016 and then 2017. Blown out.
Just absolutely blown out.
And the Cardinals weren't that good those years. They were okay. They were average.
Didn't Adrian Peterson rise from the dead?
Never seen anything like it.
He rose from the dead. The funny thing is...
Twice against the Bucs.
Because you just can never make up the things that happen in Bucs land. When the Bucs lost in Arizona week 2, 2017, that was when, DeMar Dotson said they were, no, sorry, 2016. They said they were reading their press clippings, too high on themselves. I remember when Dotson told me, I went to Joe Hawley and said, hey, DeMar just told me this. Do you buy that? He's like,
oh. Yeah, they beat Atlanta in the first game.
Okay. Hawley was like, yeah, I have to go with that. I'm like, oh, gosh.
I was absolutely stunned.
But anyway, the thing is, Arians later spoke on multiple interviews and said, that was week 2. He said after week 1, on their Sunday night loss to New England, when Chandler Catanzaro missed a kick and they lost a heartbreaker, his team never recovered. They mentally never recovered from that game. But who did they play the next week? They played the Bucs and beat them 40-7.
24-0 at the half.
Yeah, they clobbered them. But Arians still said, even so, they never recovered. And you know what? From that time, Arians' team was 500 after they lost to Patriots. The rest of the way for the next two seasons, they were 500 ball.
Some bad drafts caught up with them, Lee. And that's
a lot of bad drafts. As Steve pointed out. You know, I'll say this real quick about the Bucs defense and what an atrocity it was. You would appreciate this. I actually referred to the Hague in one of my stories. that Mike Smith should be brought up on international charges at the Hague.
You know, I want to make this point on our podcast. Now, I'm half facetious and I'm half serious.
Which
half? You tell me, Lee. One of my biggest concerns about the 2019 Bucs, I don't think Arian's staff's big enough. I said in my column, it merits another wing at one Buc place. What's going on here at the Kemper?
Bring in the trailers?
I'm not sure he's finished yet. We might have a couple more consultants coming in. They're hiring officials. They're hiring this. They're hiring that. The backup to the backup. Lee, what's going on with this?
Well, what I think was interesting was I read some
stories.
And the
Glazers keep writing checks out. Boom, boom. Okay.
Yeah, by the way. The people that say the Glazers are cheap, I mean, is this not evidence that
anything
that's
anything Arians asked for at this point, Bruce Arians going to get?
All the coaches they paid to leave.
I mean, that doesn't stop them.
No.
Right.
Yeah. But I read a story on The Athletic, and I can't remember who it was, but it's a Detroit Lions beat writer. He followed Matt Patricia. Matt Patricia went down to Alabama to do a coaches clinic. And in that trip, he had time to kill, and Patricia was actually warm to this guy and talked. They chatted for like, what, an hour and a half, two-hour trip from Detroit to Tuscaloosa. And Patricia was talking about staff sizes. And he believes in what Belichick believes, and Belichick got it from Parcells. That first off, too many coaches, it's too many cooks in the kitchen, number one. Number two, if you have a smaller staff, you can actually pay more attention to detail because you're not confused, guys aren't getting in each other's way, and even though it's a lot of work for the assistants, and you're putting a lot of work on them, both Parcells and Belichick and Patricia all believe that a smaller staff is better.
If you got the right guys.
If you have the right guys.
And I don't want to make too much out of this, Steve. You tell me. But
well, I'll tell you a lot.
I think it goes again, you know, to that little bit of concern. I'm not saying it's a five-alarm fire, which John Cooper called the lightning situation after game 2. It's not a 5-1 fire, but it's a slight concern that as the Bucs keep adding staff, you know, you wonder if Arians is going to delegate too much authority. Steve, I'm sorry. I keep thinking about it.
It's a fair point. Look, Peter King, I think the reason we're bringing this up again, wrote that I guess his research shows this is the largest staff in NFL history. Now, Arians has 28 assistants, I believe, is the number. Now, Greg Schiano was considered to have a large staff. I looked it up. I wrote it the other day. I believe he had 21 assistants plus Butch Davis. And that was considered big at the time, as Davis was a consultant. So now here we got this massive staff. I wonder if part of it is, you know, all the coaches love to talk about, we don't have as much practice time, we don't have as much time with the players because of the labor agreement since 2011. Maybe they feel they need to micromanage the time more that they have, but you certainly don't need a giant staff to win. So I don't know where this goes.
I think it might be maximizing practice time, Lee. You know, dividing the fields. I mean, there's something
like that
to be said for that.
I do like that. Get guys on the field. That's how you get better. You don't get better standing on the sidelines watching.
And of course,
it
goes to your thing about developing young talent. It's been a big problem here.
You know, I can't say whether there's any rhyme or reason that if you have a bigger staff, you lose. You have a smaller staff, you win. I don't know about that, but you know, you real quick. About the lightning and five alarm fire. That fire at Notre Dame in Paris was a backyard barbecue grill compared to the lightning.
Boy, that was tough watching that fire
yesterday. 800 years of history.
That was tough.
So, Sage, just going back to the schedule, do they really need, does this team need, does Arians need, just for the sake of the whole quote unquote culture change, does he need a soft schedule early, like a college schedule, to get out to a nice cushy 3-2 here because you played your worst? You played Arizona to open the season or something like that?
Well, I'll say this, and it's a great part of the NFL. I mean, I mentioned it, eight times in my Monday column about how 29 years in a row, at least four new teams make the playoffs. I mean, no other sport can do that. It's a big, big part of why hope resides in all these outposts from Buffalo, you know, to Miami,
except,
and all points in between, except. And from year to year, these teams change.
Yeah.
They absolutely change, and you can't go necessarily by 2018's record. You know, all of a sudden, the Browns are the darlings. Who would have thought that?
Yeah.
And by the way, the Browns are the only ones standing in the Bucks' way of having the longest playoff drought.
You're right.
The Cleveland Browns. And this is shaping up as, like, this is a problem here in Tampa because a lot of people have the Browns winning the division. I think they're 14-1 to win the Super Bowl. They're like the fifth pick.
14-1,
really? 14-1. You know, this is not like Tiger Woods winning the Masters the guy won $2.3 million or something.
But Ira,
I disagree with your premise.
Well, what's my premise? No, you have to be realistic.
Your premise is to look at the schedule and say, yeah, that team didn't make the playoffs last year. Bucks should squash them. No, teams change markedly from year to year.
Yeah, come on. Let's get real here. Arizona is on the Bucs' schedule in Tampa. Wouldn't that be the ideal opener? You're going to tell me Arizona's going to win 7, 8, 9 games this year?
I want to save Arizona for December when the Bucs are 8-5.
If Arizona comes here to open the season with Kyler Murray at quarterback, I pray to God that Todd Bowles actually watches a game or two of Kyler Murray at Oklahoma, unlike Lovie Smith, who it was an epiphany that Marcus Mariota ran a spread offense. Really, Lovie? You know, Tennessee ready? Please, Todd Bowles, if you're playing Arizona open season, watch a game or two of Oklahoma, would you?
You know, one of my goals is get Troy Aikman into the freaking house one time this year. Can I have the number one team instead of getting Dick Stockton every week?
Well, Dick Stockton.
With all respect to Dick Stockton.
That fossil?
The guy covered Julius Erving and Larry Bird playoffs in 1980.
Oh, I got a better one for you. He's the voice of Carlton Fisk's home run in 74 against the Reds.
Now, I should be talking because Steve says I'm 87 years
74.
Old. 74. Oh, 74.
No. 1974. Oh,
well, 75. That was the call.
Oh, that's 75. You're right.
75.
Yeah.
Steve, you want to get Bruce Arians off to a good start.
Well,
who would have thought they'd go into New Orleans and win?
This is my time for great prayer leading up to the schedule. Look, you know how this goes. Oftentimes, you open up in your division.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
That's not all the time, but often. Now, the Bucs are playing their home game against Carolina in England. So that's going to be probably October. That's when they play most of the England games. So they're not going to open at home against Carolina or open on the road against Carolina. If they end up hosting the Saints and then week two is in Seattle, Lee's going to be screaming 0-2 all over again.
Well, we saw how that worked out last year, Lee.
Yeah. Well, you know, my main reason for that last year, you know, they were without Jameis. And, like, who expected what we saw?
In a way, it makes it even worse what happened last year to end up at 5-11 with the revolving quarterbacks and the benchings. And because if you started out 0-3 when Winston suspended, yeah, at least you got an excuse. You got something to say. Now they had nothing. You're going to New Orleans, you beat the defending NFL champs in week two, and then You fall apart.
That's why there's a new coach, Ira.
When Bruce Arians...
Yeah. You see the voice of reason over there.
Well, first off, I'm glad this isn't video because I would be on it. But this is one of the rare times I wish it was video because I remember when they introduced Bruce Arians, and it was maybe 90 minutes after the press conference, and you and I just happened to be walking in the parking lot, and who do we cross paths with? Of all people, Joel Glazer. And you brought this very point up to him, like, Joel, you jump out to 2-1 record.
2-0.
Or 3-1. I'm sorry, 3-1 record.
And no, look, they weren't 3-1.
Weren't they 3-1?
No.
Okay,
2-0.
Yeah, 2-0 record, and it just collapsed. And his reaction was classic. I mean, he almost did a facepalm. He just big sigh and shakes his head.
And he had no answers.
Yeah, he rolled his eyes and looked at the sky.
Hey, Stevie, we saw things got settled with Mr. Russell Wilson. By the way, you know now you know it's the NFL offseason, even though it's a 12-month. You know, season. Because people go crazy. They don't know what to write. They're looking for click stories. Not Joe Buck's fan, of course. Not Joe Buck's fan. But this whole thing they built up about Russell Wilson wants to play for the Giants and Russell Wilson and can Seattle afford him. When you get an elite quarterback, he's a top five quarterback. May not be number one, but he's top five. You don't let those guys go. Lee, you got to pay him. You got to pay him. So the going price is $35 million. You know, if Jameis Winston has a big year and the Bucs make the freaking playoffs in 10-6, you pay him. You don't pay him $35 million, but you pay him $26 million.
Sure.
You do what you got to do if he's the guy.
Yeah.
You don't let the – you know why? Because if you let Russell Wilson go, you're spending the next 3 years looking for Russell Wilson. That makes no sense.
Heck, you're probably looking for Jameis Winston in 3 years.
Steve, you got to pay the guy. What are you going to do? What's the price of doing business?
Sure. Speaking of making up stuff, wasn't there speculation out of Philly that Eagles might trade Carson Palmer for Russell Wilson?
You mean Carson Wentz?
Wentz. I'm sorry.
And by the way, Lee, and you and I love this guy, and you're the first guy that mentioned it that heard Pat Kerwin and this and that. The more I thought about this, the Bucs moving up to number one and taking Quinnen Williams, it makes no sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense.
That price.
I mean, this guy's got to be Merlin Olsen. He's got to be Merlin Olsen, Lee, because...
Without the flowers?
Because, Lee, you've said many times on this podcast, there's four or five defensive linemen that you'd love at number five, so you go up to number one, it's going to cost you a minimum a second-round pick, and I think more. And,
yeah.
You know, they're trying to throw McCoy in there, and I'm not sure...
Well, who's going to take McCoy with that salary?
That's right.
Well,
that's
a team that has the money. That's the thing, because you got to spend your money in
the
NFL.
When you move up to number one, you're moving up to number one to draft a quarterback. That's what you're doing.
Ira,
the Bucs aren't doing it.
I don't like that proposed trade. I don't like it. To go from 5-1, drop your second-round pick. And
yeah, if the Bucs are trying to get rid of McCoy because of declining skills, allegedly, then why would anybody pick
this team up?
This
team can afford to give up premium draft picks? I mean, come on.
Well... Just don't screw it up.
Just don't screw it up.
I thought Steve was going to go, well, they goof up the draft picks anyway, so what good are they?
Now,
I thought you were going to go there.
Speaking of goofing up the draft picks, we've heard from Jason Light, and we're going to talk about him. Ira, your podcast, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, it's where people can subscribe and listen, and of course at JoeBucksFan.com. I have to say, I don't know if your wife ironed your shirt or something. Your Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, deep blue polo, navy blue, is fantastic.
It works well on me, doesn't it, Steven?
It fits.
It goes very well with your khaki Dockers.
Wore it on Spectrum Sports last night with Mr. Roy Cummings.
Oh, it's blue. Still, you didn't, that's not a laundered shirt?
No. And I neatly folded it over the chair this morning to make sure it was in good
shape. It's not a laundered shirt. Well, you know what? As soon as they finish the television filming, Ira takes off his shirt on set, goes bare-chested, hangs it on a
topless hanger,
and then that's how these professionals roll.
You know, and Victoria Citron saw me, and she was flabbergasted. she fell apart.
Which brings me back, before I get to the draft. Which brings me back to one of my favorite Ira stories is...
Victoria Syndrome.
Before we were going to Phoenix years ago, he's like, I got my own hotel room, right? Because I don't want you to be in a room with you when I'm in my undershirt. I'm like, Ira, what is that?
This famous story is, you know, when the trip was on the cheap side years back, and Nick Puglisi was the beat writer, and him and McEwen would go to Green Bay, you know, in the middle of December, and they'd end up splitting a hotel room. Yeah, but... You know, McEwen's going to sleep at 9:15 p.m. on a Saturday night. Puggo's ready to go out on the town. And then he looks at McEwen. He puts on a wave machine to go to sleep. And Puglisi just throws his hands up.
Okay.
What the hell's going on around here?
I was afraid I'd see him in his undershirt, whatever that means.
Well, usually he's whining about your driving.
Bruce Arians, his record with first-round picks in Arizona, Ira, was atrocious.
Let me hear it. What do we got?
Are you sure about this?
You sure you want to hear it?
Jonathan Cooper? I believe he was the first one.
He was one of their well-known busts. 2013 is the first year Arians got there. Jonathan Cooper, bust.
Jason Light on the Cardinals staff at that time.
And then 2014, their number 27 overall pick in the first round, Dayone Buchanan, who's here now.
The money backer.
I'm
still waiting for somebody to tell me what the hell that means.
So if he's here now, 5 years after he was drafted, that's not a pick that panned out.
Correct.
And he signed a one-year deal and wasn't exactly in demand in free agency. Next, we have DJ Humphreys, left tackle, the Gator, I believe. He played in just 27 games through his first four seasons. So that's a bust, 27 games in 4 years. 2016, Robert Demchi.
Big pass rusher.
The defensive tackle.
Big college pass rusher.
He was a notorious bust back out there, because I remember reading stories of Brenton Buckner talking about him and working with him and trying to get him going. Couldn't do it. And then last year he was having a breakout year. He was doing very well and then blew his knee out in November. So he never passed.
Some of those years they had late first round picks.
Yeah, late first round picks still. First round pick. He was supposed to be a starter.
Yeah.
Hassan Reddick, 2017.
Ouch.
His last year. All I need to say there, Ira, is in 2018, he went into the season, lost his starting job, was on the bench.
Boy, what a list that is, Philly.
So that's
what a list.
You're pretty much 0-5, which you got to be at least 1-5. You got to have one home run in the first round.
No wonder Arizona petered out those last 2 years under Arians.
No drafts.
And last year, worst team in football.
So is that bad luck, Ira? Is it Arians no good with his eye with these first-round guys?
Well,
he gets
Stevie,
too swayed?
We don't know for sure. His relationship with Keim in terms of the power structure. You know, Arians was a first-time NFL head coach in 2013 who said he was given all the power by the Bidwell.
That's a fair question.
Fair.
So let's wipe out Jonathan Cooper and say that was his first year. He left it all up to Keim. Okay, you're 0-4. Now what?
I understand. And now, Steve, I'll say it before you say it. Arians is wielding a big stick here in Tampa. Lee, no question about that.
No question about that. One of the first episode of All or Nothing of the Cardinals, a really cool scene was the draft war room. There were maybe five guys in the room. It included Michael Bidwell, the president of the Cardinals, Keim, Arians, and I can't think of the fourth guy.
What year was this?
McDonough. This is 2015.
2015.
Okay.
I want to say Terry McDonough used to be UCLA coach. The name is recognizable. I just can't remember right now. NFL Films.
I think
creative.
The fifth guy was Kent Summers from the Arizona Republic. They let him in the room.
And you know, NFL Films does do creative editing. I will say that. But in that episode where Keim was all set to draft Amir Abdullah, running back from Nebraska, and Detroit jumped ahead of him and got him. They didn't jump ahead of him, but they got him.
Not that the guy turned out to be Billy Sims over here.
Yeah, he lucked out. Immediately, Arians is pushing Michael Bidwell to draft David Johnson. Immediately. And he wasn't pounding the table. He wasn't screaming. But he was like very calmly stating all his attributes. And they did draft David Johnson. He had a heck of a year.
And Johnson, until he got hurt, was the number one pick in the fantasy leagues.
Wow.
Number one pick. Yeah.
Arians had a lot of success in the third round. What's his name? Honey Badger was the third round guy.
Yeah.
And there were others. So, I don't know. It's a little scary going in when the guy doesn't have the track record. And like you said, he wields a big stick. We know he's calling the shots. All right, Ira, the reason we're not at Hooters today is because we're at $1. And Jason Light, we've been putting off talking about it, but your impressions, your sage wisdom, watching him at the podium, you've been to countless of these pre-draft news conferences. What do you think?
Well, gentlemen, Light by nature, very close to the vest. Lee, this is his sixth draft with the Bucks. He's closer than ever to that darn vest. He doesn't give away much. A couple of my takeaways. Now, there's no table in front of us for DeKemper to pound his fist. Lee, don't be smashing your thigh over here because you could cause serious damage. But, Steve, one of my takeaways is you don't not take an inside linebacker because he's an inside linebacker. DeKemper, you don't like that. You don't like that. Nobody mentioned Devin White by name. Nobody mentioned Devin Bush by name. And Light's not going to go there when it comes to individual players. But the question was, inside linebacker traditionally is not a position that gets picked in the top five. Jason, do you go with the common wisdom of perception? And I don't know how much we should read into it, Steve, but Light said absolutely not. You judge the player. Now, the only position that doesn't pertain to with the 2019 Bucks is quarterback. Kyler Murray could be the top-rated player on their board. They're not taking him. They're not taking him moving up to one to take him. They're not taking him if he falls to five. They're not doing it. It's understood. Quarterback is separate. They feel they got their quarterback. We'll see. But Lee, at the risk of getting that blood pressure stoked up a little bit, he showed no inclination that he ain't taking Devin White because an inside linebacker can't impact your football team like a pass rusher. Lee looks a little subdued over there, Steve. A little subdued.
Depressed. And, this.
Now, he didn't say they're taking Devin White either.
Yeah, it's consistent with what he's done in the past. I mean, who the hell would take a kicker in the second round? If he's going to reach and take a linebacker and number five, well, first off, I got to say, it's your career, not mine. And
is the key whether Bruce Arians is saying, I want Devin White? Could that be the key, Lee? Your quarrel may not be with Mike.
Steve is more convinced. I'm not saying I don't believe it, but Steve is rock solid convinced Arians is pulling all the strings. That Light is just a figurehead now. I mean, I didn't mean to put words in your mouth, but
exactly.
I'm confident that Arians has significant influence, or he probably wouldn't be here. You know, when he says, "Well, I know I can work with Jason," meaning I know Jason will do what I tell him to do. Translation.
Sounds like Arians had a lot of clout in that first 2013 draft, at least as far as the Honey Badger was concerned. He, Jason Light didn't say Steve Keim loved Tyrann Mathieu. No. He talked about Arians. Mm-hmm. Now, he wasn't a first-round pick.
Should have been, but because of his baggage, he dropped.
I noticed Light didn't throw in a Jonathan Cooper reference for that 2013 draft.
Yeah, that lousy offensive lineman of the Cardinals. I think when we go to the linebacker, Light sort of dialed in pretty strong, saying you just can't throw in those preconceived notions of draft position when you're evaluating. I was surprised that Light went there because he actually used an analogy of Kyler Murray. So I didn't think 5'10", who would have thought a 5'10 quarterback would go top five kind of thing.
So talent trumps that kind of stuff.
So, I mean, yeah. Light made that clear, but we'll see. But I still think it's Arian's pick. So Light up there to me is just a figurehead. He's just, answering questions. Did he look comfortable to you, Ira? Did he look like a man in charge? What were your overall vibes?
The vibe looked very much like the vibe you described in Phoenix last month. Not beaten down, Lee. I think that's exaggerated. But a guy who's kind of reconciled that his power has been clipped a little.
Wings,
his power grew under Cutter. The Glazers made no bones about that. They went public with it.
And then they lost 22
games. We're empowering
games.
Jason Light. I didn't hear Joel Glazer tell Izbitz that in Phoenix last month.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows his place, Lee. Doesn't mean Jason Light doesn't have any clout at all. But he's listening very intently to what Bruce Arians is telling him.
Yes, sir. No, sir. And just to be totally fair, Light has never been comfortable at that podium. Now, as Steve said, he's been a little more chipper in years past, but he hates that podium. That's, I told this to Jenna Lane. Jenna Lane thought it was pretty funny, and she agreed with me. That's that podium, the pre-draft, that's Light's annual penance, and it's Holy Week, so he's paying his penance this week.
He's probably very concerned, Lee, that he's going to tip his hand in some way.
He's beyond reserved. I mean, all three of us know Light. You get him away from a podium, you get him off the record, the guy is as glib can be. It's almost like a different person up there, it really is, but because he's scared. He doesn't like speaking in public, number one. Number two, he's scared he's going to slip up and release some confidential information. So he is completely, totally alien to that podium and uncomfortable. And it's just more so today.
Steve, what'd you get out of my question and answer about the edge rushers and the adjustment that these guys – I was trying to get him to say, what happens when these edge rushers turn out to be busts? Why is that? And I thought he gave a pretty good answer.
You're asking me what I got out of it. This is the Ira Kaufman podcast.
You're
what
right.
did you get out of
You're
it?
Right. Why am I asking you a question?
Exactly.
Well, I don't want to dominate this conversation.
I thought he gave you a good X's and O's type of answer, whereas he was sort of a little more cursory in some of his other responses.
You know what I was thinking, Steve, is I had you know who I had in mind? Gaines Adams. I had Gaines Adams in mind.
That's stiff?
Not Noah Spence, because, you know, he's a three, according to Light, he's a 3-4 defensive line, defensive end. So, a linebacker. So, you know, the one thing that kills me about these defensive ends that get picked sometimes in the top half of the first round, they only got one move, Lee. They got the speed rush. And you know what? That doesn't work. If
unless
that's all you got,
so
it doesn't
quick.
Work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't
if that's
really
all you
work.
Have, yeah.
You know, you got to have some moves. You got to have the spin. You got to have power. You got to have guile. There's your word.
Guile.
And Gaines Adams didn't have any guile.
G-U-I-L-E?
G-U-I-L-E, baby. And so my take from Light's answer
it didn't have guile.
Is talent's not enough. And I said it several times about other positions, too. And I think that was a little bit of admission from Light that here's where we screwed up a few times is the character. You know, and Light said it before, Steve. Mistakes are made at the top of the draft from the neck up. Mm-hmm. He says it all the time. Forget the combine readings and this and that. Even the tape can lie a little bit because it doesn't tell you what's inside the guy and driving the guy.
That's why I'm
that's
so,
been a big problem around here.
That's why I'm so scared of Rashawn Gary. And we're going to talk about lousy Bucks defensive ends. He just screams Daquan Bowers. The guy's got talent up, you know, through the roof. But he's lazy,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, Bowers is another great example. That's right.
And this is, sounds like a harsh four-letter word to say this about a guy who's going to probably be drafted in first round. But when you're playing Indiana and Rutgers, I mean, the dregs of society, and you're a no-show, and you got all this talent, that tells me you're tanking. You're laying down is what I should say. That's terrible.
I believe that's one of the knocks on Sweat is that he had too many no sack games. I got to double check if it's Sweat or Josh Allen, but I think it's Sweat.
I think it's Sweat, but then again, he was against really, really, really top shelf talent. He did do something.
Yeah, it's a different
Indiana
nuance.
And Rutgers.
Didn't Light talk about the
well, wait, I want to get back
the,
to
the
what,
danger of defensive ends taking plays off and being lazy.
Yeah, he sort of explained the difference between a high motor guy
like a Nassib, who may not have the talent.
And then he sort of said the ideal guy. If you go back and listen to it, he sort of said the ideal guy is Jason Pierre-Paul.
He did.
He's the prototype superstar defensive end. But one thing that really stuck in me that I still haven't digested the whole thing, Ira, in that chat, he talked about Noah Spence. And he basically sat up there and said, well, we viewed Noah Spence as a situational pass rusher, but you can have those guys, a designated pass rusher, you can have those guys in a 4-3, but we really viewed him as a 3-4.
That was weird.
As a 3-4 linebacker.
For a coordinator who doesn't play a 3-4.
For a coordinator who said he was going to be doing multiple looks, but
really never did.
What were you doing? This was a high second-round pick. What the heck was going on? You drafted a guy who you think's a 3-4 linebacker, and you thought he'd be situational. Now, I'd have to look it up, but my recollection is in 2016, Noah Spence was starting and was playing a lot on rundowns. So they weren't even using him in the way that they thought he'd be most effective. I'm lost.
Lee, this goes back, and we don't want to make too much of it, but it's got to be mentioned.
We should.
There has been a disconnect between the personnel department and the coaching staff over the years. Guys have been drafted to be used in a certain way, and they're not used in that way. It's not a good. It hasn't been a good match, Lee. And there's too many examples. And now you got Hargraves and Carlton Davis finally coming up for air to breathe a little bit with the press corner. And we'll see how much press corner they play. We'll see. They'll play it as long as they show that they can play it, mm-hmm. Lee. You know. But if you don't get a strong pass rush, press corners can get destroyed. You know that.
You just hit the nail on the head. I was waiting for Steve to invoke Carlton Davis and Vernon Hargraves' names because those guys are press corners. They're not zone. And Mike Smith's out there trying to turn them into zone guys 12 yards off the ball. It's like square peg, round hole. You know, it's bad enough you spent a second round pick a couple years ago. And the coaches, apparently, I'll give Light the benefit of the doubt. He knew what he was drafting, and he hoped that Mike Smith would use him right. That didn't happen. Didn't happen with Noah Spence. So you think you'd learn. Instead, he doubled down and got two corners and, after the Noah Spence debacle.
And, Lee, he also went out of his way when I asked him about defensively, how does a new coaching staff and possibly a new scheme affect his the guys that he's going to try to get for that system. He went out of his way to applaud Bowles for being open-minded, Lee, and using guys in the right way, fitting the scheme around the person. Where has that been,
well,
Mr. DeKemper?
First off, I'll believe that when I see it. I'm not, and that's not a knock on Bowles. We heard the song and dance before, and Steve heard the interview. A couple days after the Bucks hired Mike Smith, Jason Light is on SiriusXM NFL Radio crowing about how Mike Smith crafts his defense around his players. Now he's saying the same thing about Bowles.
That's a great point, Lee.
Great point. I've been there, done that.
You got to watch the hyperbole. You got to watch it.
All right, Ira, I needed to take a moment after I brought that Noah Spence thing because I felt my heart palpitating, and the whole draft and the whole history.
He had
stuff.
A pretty good rookie season, Steve.
It drives
You're not
me
wrong.
Crazy.
Promising.
But we're talking about a guy who the GM just sort of said, we drafted a guy for a scheme we don't play, and then we didn't use him in the way that we thought he was best. And look at the – I'm just going to read some names that were drafted after Noah Spence.
What pick was he in that draft?
39 overall.
Okay, 39 overall.
We'll go to a guy I wanted at the time. Sterling Shepard was drafted next. Giants, great slot receiver. Excellent player on the rise. But, of course, there's Derrick Henry of the Titans. Running back. Michael Thomas.
Wow.
Of the Saints. Drafted a little later. Your friend, Ira. Deion Jones.
Love him. Love him.
I mean, these are second-round picks, Ira. It goes.
Did you hear Isbeth's voice go up an octave with that over there, Lee?
I also heard second round.
I did hear second round.
It's, and, of course, you know, Lee's written many times about how we knew that inside the building there was a lot of love for Pro Bowl defensive end, future Pro Bowl defensive end, Yannick Ngakoue out of the Jaguars.
You just love saying that guy's name, Isbeth. You say it every freaking podcast.
At least he can say it. I can't.
And I don't even know if I said it right, but it just goes on, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating when you hear this stuff.
Now, Lee, Steve doesn't like me to beat around the bush on this podcast. It's my podcast. He likes me to get to the
Devin Bush.
To the meat of it, so I'm going to get to the meat of it. Can you imagine the frustration, seething frustration, with the personnel department headed up by Jason Light over the last 3 years about the way certain young players were being utilized and not developed? Can you imagine?
Well,
this is not one kumbaya going on in the halls of one Buck. I get the impression, tell me if I'm wrong, that if you get a couple of beers in Light, maybe more than a few, and it's off the record, he'd be killing the coaching staff over the last few years.
It had to be a few beers.
He's not going to do it at a podium. Nor should he.
I tried to get him to go there off the record before. He would not.
Well, you're not buying him enough beers.
That's what I mean. You might have to. By the way, kumbaya, define that for people under 40.
I can't spell it. It means everybody's in this together and everybody's happy.
Yeah, I mean, I know what it is.
Sort of like the three guys here sitting there at the
podcast. But I know not all of us are under 45. But here's one for you. Maybe Steve
is. Am I exaggerating this?
No, but
wouldn't that be nice?
When you asked, can I imagine? I don't have to imagine. Now, this, I don't know about Cutter, but with Lovie Smith, it was funny. And this is some inside baseball. The Redskins had screwed up my credentials when, you know, the Capitol collapsed that game. And I was supposed to be sitting next to you and Cummings. But instead,
When you met us for lunch on Saturday and we went to a Chinese restaurant or something?
Yeah, I didn't know
just
it was Saturday.
Just throwing a little color in
here, there too. So anyway.
I believe you had the shrimp with lobster sauce, though, Lee.
No.
You may continue.
Yes. The Redskins screwed up my credential. Instead of sitting next to you guys, they had me sitting in the end zone, which I'm okay with. And I was sitting with, like, Sporting News, USA Today, people like that. But by happenstance, who was sitting behind me? Light and his staff.
They got end zone seats, too?
Yeah, right behind me.
Oh, boy.
And this is why I was happy with that.
That Dan Snyder, he's a piece of work.
Well, it wasn't Dan Snyder. Someone screwed up the credentials. At any rate, the Bucks are melting down in the second half.
Big lead. Big lead.
You should have heard the pounding of fists. Well, like mine. But in plural, the sighs, the muttering and cussing under their breath. They were about ready to strangle someone. Now, I know I don't know that they were doing the same thing with Cutter.
What year was that, Isbeth? the meltdown in D.C.
2015.
But October.
I will never forget
Lovey's
that.
Lovey's last year.
Yeah. Okay. So when you say, can you imagine? I don't have to imagine. I witnessed it. I heard it. I was right.
They
right
went into the shell of all shells in that game, Steve. Anything the Redskins wanted to do, they could have completed 37 straight passes.
And I contend to this day that was Lovey's Waterloo. He was toast after that.
There were a couple of red zone calls, which proved to be a foreshadowing of his future with the Bucs. Go back, watch that game. For sport, Ira, this summer, put your feet up. The hell with the everybody loves Raymond.
Get a cool beverage.
Go online, watch the Capitol collapse. Some red zone calls by Dirk Cutter in that game. Just mistakes. And Cutter later said he made some mistakes in that game with calls.
What was their lead at in that
24-point lead?
I think it was 24-0, I believe.
Yeah.
Just they blew
Jameis
it.
Was on fire.
It. But you know what? Cutter never fixed some of those red zone woes that just plagued him all the way through. All right, now, Ira, next podcast, we're going to dive more into Jason Light. But I wanted to get you on the news of the day, which question was posed to Jason Light. Gerald McCoy, why did Bruce Arians tell him not to come to the offseason workouts? And what does Arians say? You got to ask Bruce.
What does Light say? Yeah.
What does Light say? You got to ask Bruce. Yeah, your thoughts there.
Well, it goes back to something you said earlier. Can you botch a scenario more than this has been botched with 93?
Is it botched?
I think it's botched. I'm still pissed off that Arian said he was not the player he was 4 years ago. I don't care if it's true, and it probably is true. You know, for a 9-year veteran, he's not as good as he was in year 5. You don't say it. Lee, you don't say it. You're trying to peddle the guy. Now, some of the fans are saying, Ira, what are you talking about? Everybody knows the tape. They don't need Arians to say it. You still don't say it. You don't say it. I got to be surprised if McCoy's on this roster. I got to be surprised.
It's pretty clear. Now, first of all, I don't like that Light said that. What do you got to ask Arians? Well, make him available. He knows Arians isn't available till 3-4 weeks from now?
Next week,
but he's not going to answer McCoy questions.
Exactly.
Next week.
So that was
no,
a cop.
No, there's practice next week, and Arians will talk at practice. So he'll be available.
That was a total cop out. Like, Light doesn't know? Give me a break. He knows. He just didn't want to talk about it. But very obvious. The Bucs don't want McCoy come out here blown out a knee, and then they got to cough up $13 million. It's clear as day. It's clear as day. He's gone.
He's gone. And McCoy knows it. McCoy knows it.
So. Well, he knew it after the final game last year. He all but said it.
It's interesting, though, Ira, because, you know, they know that McCoy is a training warrior. You know, he always goes out to San Diego, and he works out on his own here. He's put stuff out on Instagram, and, you know, we've seen some of his private workouts, clips of them with the ex-Bucks strength and conditioning guy.
Now, is that guy in Tampa?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. The reason why I asked that, a couple weeks ago, McCoy's at the private workouts with the former Bucks trainer. Not at the same day, but 2 days apart. Guess who else was there? A guy who wouldn't lift a finger to work out with Jameis. DeSean Jackson makes a special trip from California to work out in Tampa.
Which former Bucks trainer? Which guy?
Joe Vaughn.
Okay.
Joe Vaughn. I don't know. I don't know what the Bucks are really doing. McCoy could easily get hurt in the same way.
But they don't want to be liable. I see where you're going, Steve. I just don't think it. You know, if it happens, it happens. Away from here, they don't want to be part of the problem.
Yeah, it's just interesting. And then, if that's the case, why wouldn't Light just say it's an organizational decision? You know, and that's it. I don't know, but I still think
I think this whole league knows that McCoy's up for grabs.
Yeah, the whole thing's just been bungled. I think every which way. Why doesn't this happen with other teams? Have you ever heard in your sage decades of covering the NFL? Have you ever heard a team who has a player that everybody loves so much? They respect him so much. Work ethic guy, Glazers. Joel Glazer's giving me an explanation of what a wonderful Buccaneer the guy is. And then they tell him not to show up, if that's in fact the case, which it seems to be. And he's still here. And then the coach is throwing a little shade at him. Do you remember anything like this ever?
I mean, the Giants didn't say anything about Odell Beckham before they dealt him. Even Tomlin held his tongue on Antonio Brown, and that guy was a team wreck.
Did he? I'm not sure.
He did a pretty good job of toeing the line.
Even Rooney kept his mouth shut?
For the most part.
He spoke up once.
The Giants didn't say anything about Beckham, you know, before
Gettleman would never do something like that, yeah.
You know, you got to be circumspect. You got to be discreet, Steve. And The Bucks have not been discreet in this episode.
I'm not arguing with you. Trust me, I'm not arguing with you. You know I respect you so much. I want to say, and Steve's got his laptop out, that Rooney came out and said, we got to get, you know, Antonio Brown's got to, you know, clam up here, of all people, Rooney.
Well, that got to be an intolerable situation, okay. You know, and McCoy is not to that level.
Oh, no, not even close.
Right, that's what makes it odd to me, is that McCoy is beloved.
Yeah, not team guy.
Antonio Brown, not a team guy. These other Odell Beckham, a little out there.
A little out there.
McCoy, everybody loves him. The players are up there saying, oh, man, you know how we feel about Gerald.
I talk to him every week.
Yeah, Gerald. You think he's a Buccaneers Ring of Honor guy.
I do.
40% of the fans do. And this is how this ends? There just feels like they bungled it. Here's a question for you, Sage. When do they cut him? Right? Let's say there's no trade for McCoy. Let's say there is no trade for McCoy out there. And whoever is out there realizes that, you know what, we'll take our chances, Jason, that we'll get him when he's cut. When do they cut him? Do they find a quiet day in June to say it's
late? Yeah, you cut him before training.
A quiet day in June.
You cut him before training camp. Because
Mother's Day? No, June is Father's Day.
It's another sad chapter.
May is Mother's Day.
Chapter, Steve. There's been too many sad chapters to list.
And Lee wrote about this, and what's going to happen is last year, the crazy thing last year at this time, nobody was signing safeties. Nobody. They're all on the market. And then in comes the flood of late signings on the safeties on the cheap. And then this year, the safeties break the bank left and right. You know, from Tyrann Mathieu on down to the guy broke the bank first in Carolina, Eric Reed.
It's Tyrann Mathieu. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but a year ago, nobody wanted him. Now we've got all these defensive tackles on the market. Sue is sitting out there. Probably McCoy is going to be sitting out there. The other guy used to play for the Jets, Richardson.
Wilkerson.
And you think where do these guys end up, and how cheap do you think they end up playing, Ira?
Well, the first thing I'm going to tell you is they ain't going to get much from McCoy. Not going to get much for him.
No.
That's just a fact of life.
A declining guy with a $13 million salary?
You know, also, I don't think he's going to make $13 million no matter where he goes.
No, next year.
That's not what
do you think happens to all these defensive tackles, though?
There's a place for Ndamukong Suh in this league.
He just came off a Super Bowl team.
He was with a Super Bowl team. I don't think he's a great player. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a great player. I just don't.
At the top of their careers, you know, they always be compared to each other, like Mary
always,
Winston.
Always.
At the top of their games, McCoy was better than Sue. At their current stage of their careers, Sue's better than McCoy.
You know, when Sue came out of college, he was considered a once-in-a-10-year talent.
Yeah.
He was. And the projections, even though he played inside, like a sap, where you don't get that many sacks, that he was going to be the best defensive tackle in football within 2 or 3 years. He was going to have a couple of 12-sack seasons. It really hasn't happened.
He had two really good seasons, you know, and he fell off the map.
He's been a pretty good run stuffer, Steve. He's played for some playoff teams, which McCoy has not.
Yeah, Lions and Rams.
But you only want to take that so far in a team sport like football. I don't want to blame McCoy for playing with a bad team.
Was Sue with the Dolphins when they made the playoffs?
I believe he was.
Yes.
I believe he was. I think Sue's career is rated higher than McCoy's right now, probably because of the playoff appearances. But all three guys are going to they're going to have a job this fall, but not at an exorbitant price. Not at an exorbitant price.
I think I'll disagree with you. I just think early Sue, first couple of years, is better than McCoy, anything McCoy put out. You know, first couple of years, he was dominant. He was just one of those guys.
Like an immovable force.
All pro, right out of the gate, just one of those early Sue, and then things went bad in general.
Different type of player than McCoy, stronger.
Yeah, completely
stronger
different.
Than McCoy at the point of attack.
All right, Ira, we're going to talk more about Jason Light on the next podcast and his words today, because there's a lot of little angles that we can take, plenty more to get into there. But one thing I wanted to run past you, Ira, and maybe this is just me being hypersensitive, maybe this is the wacky soap opera of the Bucks, but I'm home the other night, I'm listening to Bill Polian on Sirius NFL radio, and he's talking about DeAndre Baker, the cornerback, probable second rounder out of Georgia. And he likes the guy a lot, but he flat out says he's not fast enough, and 4.5 speed, you need the elite speed, it's got to be better than that, and watching him and blah blah blah, the 4.5 speed's just not enough for him to be considered someone who would ever be great, but he likes him as a very good player and he feels he has enough speed to be very good, just he's never going to hit that level. Now Vernon Hargreaves ran a 4.5, and so did Carlton Davis. Now, is it fair to take the leap that would say Polian probably laughed somewhere when the Bucks drafted Hargreaves number 11 or 12 overall?
Well, I'll say it at this point. I can just see DeKemper nodding his head in agreement with me on this one. I'll take very good. Okay, you don't have to have a busted can. I'll take very good. As a matter of fact, I'll take good right now. Because look at what the Bucks have had at corner. Grimes was awful last year. I'm not down on Carlton Davis, Lee. I'm not down on him.
No.
I think with the proper coaching, and boy, that's a big, big if around here.
Yes.
I don't think he's scared. I don't think Davis is scared. I think he's got the temperament for the position. He's got the size for the position. And Steve, if he runs a 4.5 instead of a 4.4, I'm okay with it, DeKemper. I can live with that. You know, look, everybody's looking for the next Deion Sanders. Guys, that's once in 20 years.
Yeah.
If. The next Patrick Peterson, once in 8 years. It doesn't happen very often. Not Darrell Revis. Darrell Revis. How do you like that one?
I said Darrell.
Once every 8-10 years. You get a guy like that. So I'll take very good, Steve, and I'll snap at it. I'll grab it, and I'll cherish it.
Kind of like those shots at the draft party. You'll cherish them. All right, we'll go out on this note. All right, I ran a poll at Joe Buck's Fan. I know you love the people.
Love the poll.
You're a man of the people and their reaction.
We get a lot of answers on ours.
I asked fans, where do you want to see the Bucks draft a running back? There were options for I don't know. There were options for I don't want to see him draft a running back.
Last I saw, I believe the third round was the winner.
Third round was a clear-cut winner.
And I've been saying third round.
That's fair.
So do you agree with the people, and what do you think the mindset of the people is?
I'm a man of the people, Lee, and I agree with the people. I've said it on this podcast. Third round sounds about right for me. It does. Now, of course, the Kemper's going to go crazy if they don't take a pass rusher in the first two rounds, and then they end up taking a running back in the third round. What the hell's going on here? They're going to get a third-day pass rusher. They need another running back.
Yeah, I think third-round running back is absolutely correct. I agree. You know, maybe this Miles Sanders with Penn State, who the Bucks have worked out privately. Maybe he slides. I'm all on board with that.
And Steve, I'll go one further. How about a quarterback in the fourth round? How do you like that? A quarterback in the fourth round. Do it. Do it, Bruce. Do it.